Hello and welcome to the Robin Smith Suite here at the Aegeus Bowl. It's the BBC Radio Solent Hampshire Cricket Forum. On the panel this evening, Hampshire Chairman Rod Bransgrove, new men's head coach Adrian Birrell, Captain James Vince, and Women's Cricket Director and the former England captain Charlotte Edwards. We rehearsed that about 10 times before we came on air. As you can hear, we're joined once more by a healthy number of Hampshire members and several Radio Solent listeners. We're on 96.1 FM and online via bbc.co.uk/cricket. Now, you can tweet us at Solent Sport if you want to put a question to the panel or make any comments on what you hear. I've also got a list of questions already submitted by Hampshire members over the last few days, and our audience here are also free to ask questions. Right, let's get underway. I think always a good way to start is previewing the new upcoming season, which of course is just over a week away, a home game against Essex here at the Aegeus Bowl. Who should we start with? Let's start with new head coach Adrian Birrell. Your thoughts ahead of the new season on the two or three weeks that you've seen so far of the squad?
Well, I'm very excited to finally get started. It's been a good couple of weeks getting to know the players. I think I've bedded in well and got to know all of them individually. We're finally getting towards some better weather for me, but also the squad. And we've had some warm-up games, and we went away to La Manga. So there's been quite a lot of preparation in leading up to our first match on the 5th Friday next week. So I feel we're in good space to start playing cricket.
Mm. I should say team manager, Adrian Birrell, straight away. So even I'm getting used to new faces around the place as well. James Vince here as well, captain in the side for another season. I think it's fair to say, James, red ball cricket is probably the area that Hampshire needs to improve the most.
Yeah, definitely. The white ball stuff over the last 5-10 years, I think we've had the most trophies. So need to continue what we're doing there. We've got a good, healthy approach to the game and a squad that has performed very well. So I think, yeah, the Red Bull, since AD's come in, we've had a chat, and he's rightly pointed out if we carry on doing the same things, we'll probably end up with the same result. So there's a few things which we've highlighted, preparation, planning, some basic stuff which we can improve on to help our performance. But ultimately it comes down to, the players performing and doing the stuff on the pitch, and hopefully a good start, build confidence. We know confidence in cricket means a lot, so hopefully get off to a good start, build confidence. A few little changes that we make hopefully work, and we have a good year.
Rod, there's been a few changes behind the scenes during the winter. Obviously, Adrian Birrell, team manager, is one, but there's been a number of changes to the coaching staff as well ahead of this new season.
Well, yeah, they have, and that's a part of the progression of the club as we continue to move forward. I mean, as we've just heard, that we've had a very good record in white ball cricket. In fact, since 2005, we've won 6 white ball trophies. And if I told you that that's more than Yorkshire have managed in their entire history, you'll recognise what an achievement that is. I should add, by the way, that Yorkshire have won the county championship 30-odd times, so... Yeah. So that's something that we need to address, and that's definitely been on our radar for the last year or two, and I know that AD's heavily bought into that concept, but we're not giving anything away for that. The intention is we start unbeaten in all competitions, and we go for it in every direction as we have in the past. And at this moment, I'm feeling very optimistic.
Mm, that's for sure. Let's bring in Charlotte. Obviously now, when we talk about the Aegeus Bowl here, we don't just talk about Hampshire cricket. There is the Southern Vipers and, of course, the all-conquering Hampshire women who won the 50-over competition, which is the equivalent of the Women's County Championship. So looking ahead to the women's competitions this year, what about your thoughts?
Yeah, really excited. I mean, I think you played so well last year with a young team. I'm not playing this year, I'm taking on a coaching role, so the youngsters are going to be left to it this year, which is good for them, and we start on the 5th of May here, actually at the nursery ground, so very excited to start our campaign at the Aegeus Bowl, and we've got some highly talented youngsters in Katie George, in Charlie Dean, and they're all under 20, which is, you know, incredibly exciting for the future here at Hampshire and the Southern Vipers. So, yeah, I'm very optimistic about the summer and looking forward to coaching and being involved.
Can the Hampshire women do it again?
Yeah, they can. It's going to be tough. Look, it was we really outdid ourselves last year. The expectation, you know, last year our goal was to stay up in the league, and we managed to win it. So, look, of course we're going to go into it wanting to win, but we know we're going to come up against some very, very strong teams.
Mm. Listen, we're going to talk more about women's cricket as lots of subjects between now and 8 o'clock. I've got several questions here that were submitted, as I said a little bit earlier. Let's come back to AD. This is from George Kimber Swetman, who says, AD, which format would you say do you specialise in? Or do you specialise in a particular format?
Not particularly. I hope I specialise a little bit in all. And, I'm equally comfortable with T20 as I am in four-day cricket, so I'm a cricket coach, and that's what I do. Mm. So all formats, and you know, we start as Rod was saying, we start our campaign trying to win all formats, and that's what we're going to do.
I'm always interested, you know, somebody like yourself who was successful with Ireland, took them to the World Cup for the first time in 2007. A former assistant coach at South Africa, amongst others as well, that you've done. I'm always interested in the first 2 or 3 weeks when you come in cold, basically, don't you, as a coach? And I guess it's fair to say that not many of us knew you that well. Obviously, people that play in the game would know you a bit better, but generally, you come into a squad. What's it like for the first 2 or 3 weeks as a new, well, manager, basically, but, you know, everything? What's it like?
Well, it's not my first gig.
No, but I mean generally. When
I know, you, yeah. I know that. So I have a sort of formula that I use, and it starts with a cup of tea. But it's not actually the tea; it's having a chat to all the players, finding out their history. You know, in my province in South Africa, I'd know a little bit about players who I hadn't even coached, by where they went to school and who coached them, and I would have followed their careers a little bit. And coming in cold, you don't really know the players very well, at all, other than the ones that have, you know, that I've coached in the past. So you get to know the player, you get to know, you know, what makes him tick, and what his likes and dislikes are, and his life outside of cricket. And so you try and get a picture of what that individual's like, and slowly but surely you pick up on his technique and how he performs under pressure, and slowly you get to know the person better and better. But it takes a lot of conversations and a lot of observation and a lot of watching in different situations. So you build a picture slowly but surely.
So you're a good listener?
I think I'm good at asking questions.
Right. How have you found AD so far, James?
No, he's been really good. he's in the few chats we've had, I think, myself and everyone was, you know, surprised at how much he knew about Hampshire. I think that was, you know, credit to him. He did a lot of homework, obviously some South African connections as well, but he didn't just turn up and, you know, try and deal with it from day one. It was clear that he'd looked into the club, knew a lot about the club's history, which I think, you know, sat really well with the players straight away. And all the chats I've had amongst the guys about AD have all been very positive. So, so far, so good.
Mm, good. Rod, it was a thorough process, wasn't it, for the team manager's job?
Yeah, it was indeed. We went through a huge number of applications before we came down to a short list. And apart from Giles and myself, we were joined by external advisors in the interview process. And I'm thrilled to bits that that AD took the position. And I'd just echo, incidentally, what James was just saying. He was pulling me up on the history of Hampshire in the first time we met over here. So I've got to be careful that I get it right in future.
Charlotte, have you come across AD before in your travels?
Yes, we have quite a number of times, actually. The last time I met AD was in Adelaide. We had dinner together in a lovely Argentinian restaurant. with two Irish girls. And yeah, I know when Rod spoke to me about, you know, who, you know, Adie would be a great fit for this club. You know, he's got such a big character, obviously huge experience. So I think we found a great guy in Adie, and I'm sure he'll work brilliantly this summer with the guys.
Brilliant. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the makeup of the side, the men's team, first of all, excuse me, for this coming summer. I think it's fair to say James Vince sounds like he's got a bit of a chance, doesn't he, getting back in the England squad. I noticed, James, that you opened in the first couple of pre-season matches. I'm going to ask you first, is this a tactic because of what we heard coming out of the England camp, maybe, maybe not, that if you were opening the batting this year, that gave you a strong chance of getting back in the England side?
Firstly, I don't think just opening the batting is going to make a difference, but opening the batting and doing it well, I think I've had chats with Ed Smith and Rooty in the last couple of weeks, and you know, I just wanted to find out from them what my best way back into the side was. And the feedback I got was, you know, the higher up the order that you bat, the better. They're more willing to move people down rather than up. And I guess with how the winter's gone for England, it probably looks from afar as if up the top of the order is where there may be spaces open up. But it wasn't a decision based purely on, you know, my future and trying to get back in the England side. We also, you know, Jimmy Adams retired, so, you know, we lost a very experienced opener up the top there. And going from three to opening, I don't think it's a massive jump. You know, it will be slightly different, but it's not as if I'm going from six or seven to opening. So it'd be more of a mental thing, and I think it's a good fit for the team. We've got a lot of guys that are comfortable in the middle order, and if I can open and do it well, it should, you know, give us a good start and hopefully allow the guys in the middle to come in, you know, when the ball's a bit older and play the way they do. Mm.
It's quite interesting. Last year, when you were batting at three, and I think I'm right, I know Dave Allen's over there, he might correct me, but I think I calculated all the opening partnerships in the Championship last year. Now, it's not just unique to Hampshire, because obviously conditions weren't easy, but I think I'm right in saying, on average, the opening partnership was 19 or something, or 24. It might be one of the two, but I've got a feeling it was 19. So even batting at three, probably felt like you were opening most of the time.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll stay at three after hearing that.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not good, is it, looking at your England chances? Adie, is it a conscious decision to open with James, or you know, or was there other factors at play there?
Well, I think everything's a conscious decision, and you know, he needs to give himself the best chance of playing for England. I think, you know, my job here is to compete for trophies and produce England players, and we want to give our players the best chance possible to play for England. So, you know, if he opens and puts the numbers on the board, he's got every chance of playing for England.
I hope these wickets are more conducive to batting in the first couple of games as well. There's a question here from Peter Jeffs. Rod, what plans are there for establishing a strong opening batting partnership this season? We're kind of talking about that at the moment. Has the opening partnership been a big source of discussions during the winter?
Yes, it has been a source of discussions, but at the end now, the structure that we've got really leaves that responsibility with the first team manager, and the first team manager will manage that with the captain or however he thinks is appropriate. So really, it's a debate that won't include me, quite rightly. But you can see already that there are potential changes even from the practice matches, and no doubt that will continue.
Mm. How much do you get involved in the men's side of it? I mean, I know you're women's cricket director, so I mean, obviously, but I mean, do you not?
Best place.
Do you purposely stay out of it?
Or? Oh, it was really nice. I went into the team meeting the other day, and it was really nice to hear AD address the team and talk about the history of the game, and I actually really enjoyed that. But other than that, no, I definitely keep away and obviously focus on the girls, but I obviously keep a very keen eye on what's going on. I've been following all their warm-up games, you know, desperate for the guys to do really well this season.
We heard Adie in his sort of assessment of his first few weeks as team manager and how he approaches each new job. What about yourself? Because I think Women's Cricket Director is still a fairly new position for you, isn't it? It's not been a few months, isn't it, really? Maybe a bit longer.
Well, no, I've been here 12 months doing the role, but it's not full time. But it's been great for me since stopping playing to have something to focus on and a real challenge, and I've thoroughly enjoyed the role. It's obviously not as developed as the men's game at the moment, but there's more and more money being invested, and you know, I'm very appreciative to everything that certainly Rod and Hampshire have done for women's cricket to develop it with the Southern Vipers and Hampshire cricket, and I think that's a result of our success last year, really, was the fact the investment that's been made in women's cricket in this club.
When we talk about this is probably an opportune time to bring it up. When we talk about investment, you probably noticed that the Women's Premier League football had huge investment from a certain well-known bank with a light blue logo. I won't mention who they are. And I mean, I forget the sums involved, but I mean, for that is quite huge. Do you see one day the Women's Super League cricket, or whatever it might be in the future, we'll discuss that shortly. Do you see huge investments being put into that in that same level? Maybe not that same level, but something that corresponds to that.
I wouldn't be surprised that, you know, how it's moving. You know, since I stopped playing, there's so much more money being invested in women's programs, and I think with the 100 coming up, I think it's a massive opportunity for the women's game and globally for the game. There's so many more opportunities now, and I think that's a very exciting time to be involved in the game.
Do you feel like you've missed out?
No, not at all. The thought of opening the batting in April when James was talking about that, and I was like, absolutely not.
Aidy, obviously, women's cricket in South Africa, how does that compare to the way it's going here?
I would say it's pretty small, and I think their main side have done quite well over the past few years, and you know, they're pushing the England, New Zealand, and Australia quite hard now, where before it was sort of one-way traffic. But they've been able to get a nucleus of players and really professionalise those players, and I think they've moved forward in giant steps over the last few years.
Yeah.
It does need, I think, like everywhere, good infrastructure and a good, you know, good ground base to work up from, which I think is a longer term thing. But they've got some real role models that are playing at the top, you know, at the top end. That you know, I think young players. I see new names coming in there all the time, which is really good. It shows that there is something. You know, at grassroots, and there's some movement. But I think the Proteas team, you know, they've done really well over the last few years.
And they're all full-time?
I think most of them are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the England the England women are, aren't they? They're all full-time, aren't they?
Yeah.
All pros.
And that sort of thing.
So coming back behind that, so when we take, say, the Southern Vipers, would they all be full-time professional?
No, at the moment there's only 22 professional cricketers in England, and that's England contracted players. We contract Southern Vipers players on for a month for that KSL period, and I guess the ambition is now to grow that, and hopefully in the next few years we'll be able to do that. We're waiting to hear of the new domestic structure from the ECB, but it looks exciting, and it could mean that players could be paid in the near future.
Yeah. And am I right in saying, Rod, that even coming down the next level to Hampshire Women, there's maybe plans to help them out more financially in the future?
Yeah, well, I think the world's woken up to the fact that 50% of us are female, and sport belongs to everybody. And I must say that from my point of view, I watched, I don't know whether I should say this, but I watched a test match here, a ladies' test match in 2002, England against Sri Lanka. And I watched for a whole session and didn't see a single boundary, and I saw some pretty ordinary wicket-keeping and ground fielding that you would expect school kids to do better than. The improvement over the last decade or so has been unbelievable and exponential. It's getting better all the time. And that's what happens when you invest in a sport. So I'd be very, very surprised if the ECB weren't to up the investment in ladies' cricket. It's become a passionate and competitive game. And we've got to switch on to this. There's two different kinds of cricket, and the same as there has been for donkey's years in tennis and other sports. We're still playing catch up, but I think we've made great strides.
You've just come back from a big, successful, almost successful totally successful Big Bash series with the Sydney Sixers. Obviously, the women's Big Bash over there is quite big, isn't it? So, I mean, what would you your assessment of the way that's going?
Well, both competitions, like you say, they sort of run side by side. The men follow the women and the women follow the men. You know, the franchise is almost one. You know, there's a lot of integration, certain events. We went along and watched the women's team in the final. They came and supported us when they could. So there's a real crossover and interaction between the two.
And would you like to see more of that here?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the way it's going, you know, it's only going to benefit, you know, both teams. The more in cricket, the more people you speak to, the more information you get, the more chance you've got of improving. So, yeah, I think over time, hopefully we can cross over and, you know, learn from each other.
I think one of my overriding memories last year of the end of season dinner over at the hotel was the giving out of awards, which, you know, has happened for quite a few years to, you know, this player, best bowler of the year, best batsman of the year, that sort of thing. But actually when the Hampshire women came up on the stage as a team and were applauded for the fact that they won the 50 over county championship, it really felt like one club together, Rod, didn't it? It was something that, you know, it's all moving in that direction, and that was really nice, wasn't it, that evening?
Oh yeah, I mean, we're ahead of that curve. It is one club together, and a lot of that has been achieved by Charlotte. The improvement in ladies cricket, a lot of it is down to Charlotte and Claire and people that have really brought the game, really grabbed it by both hands and made it into something quite special. Well, yeah. One has to be careful these days. But I mean, I do believe this is where the game is going to have a lot of catch up for another decade or so to come, and I hope we remain right at the front of that. We'll never take our eyes off the men's game as well, but what we recognised a long time ago is that this is a game for all people. And it's up to us to make sure that we offer the best that's available in both groups.
You said earlier, Rod, that obviously that there needs more investment in the women's game. But, of course, we've got the 100 competition around the corner next year, which, if you to believe reports, and I know you all know better than the reports, Rod, that the UCB's reserves have dropped low because they're putting a lot of money into this new competition to then sort of, you know, put more money into the women's game as well. Has the UCB got that safeguard in terms of financial capital to service all that?
I think I might have answered this question before. At the end of the day, without the new competition, without investment in ladies cricket, there isn't very much else for cricket to do. It was meandering already. And it's followed closely by something like 60 or 70,000 county members up and down the country who have really, with the greatest of respect, had a stranglehold over the development of the game. And what we've never done up to now is broken out and really attracted the other 50% of the population. And of course, the 60 million or so people who aren't cricket members. We haven't given them a product which they feel content with. We're all huge Red Bull lovers. Of course we are. That's why we're all here, and that's why we follow our side so closely. But to engage with young people these days, you can't offer them a game that goes over 4 days and still might not end up with a result. So we've got it's a sport which is designed for the connoisseur, and the only way I think we can protect that for the long-term future is to find another format which younger and different people will take a shine to and adhere themselves to, which are more exciting, more vibrant, and all the stuff that many of us don't like, but I do, incidentally. And I think that's what the research has said that 100 ball cricket will do. So I think we're going in exactly the right direction, and the reason that they're investing so heavily in it is because, if you recall, the last broadcasting rights agreement, which covered the 5 years that we're just about to end now, the broadcasting rights were sold for something like £240 million. In the next 5 years, the broadcasting rights have been sold for £1.2 billion. And the only thing that's changed is the new competition in it. So let's not kid ourselves that there isn't an appetite for something different out there, particularly from the broadcasters. But once the broadcasters are on board, and bear in mind the comments that some of you have made in the past about terrestrial television, which is also included in showing matches of the 100, we've got a product which really will start bringing the masses back into the game that we love.
Mm. one thing that's been quite interesting over the last few months or so is that there's been sort of not much information that's come out about this new competition, and yet the media has been full of people that say, well, you know, we shouldn't have this competition. It's almost been, that side of it has almost been given more column inches, more broadcast time, than maybe more messages coming from the ECB as to what we might expect.
Well, that sounds like a statement.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, I mean, I don't know if anybody else feels like that, but I don't think there's been enough information forthcoming yet about the 100. Why might that be?
Well, I think it's partly because the media, JMO, have a habit of distorting information if it's not complete, and then inventing it if they don't have it. So, you know. So there's your answer.
Yeah. I wish you wouldn't sit on the fence on that one. Anyway. Let's do a quick straw poll. Who in this room is looking forward to the new 100 competition? Yeah, Charlotte, thank you. I think it's less than a quarter. So, are people undecided about it? Who's undecided? Probably a few more, actually, maybe almost a quarter. So who's not looking forward to it? So can I ask why you're not looking forward to it? Why? What is it that you're not looking forward to? Does anybody want to have a quick... Okay, Kane hasn't got that. So we've already got a T20 competition. Why can't that be used? Who wants to answer that? Rod, go on. Vincey, go on. No, Rod, you start. Go on.
Well, look, you know, this isn't just to replicate what we've got already. The county chairman, in fairness, had collectively said they wanted it to be differentiated from the competition that we've already had. But bear in mind, there's been a lot of market research underpinning all this with people that aren't like us. You know, people that don't really follow cricket, that would have an interest in it if it was the right packaging, you know, if it was more vibrant, if there was bigger hitting, if, you know, big diving catches and fireballs and dancing girls and things like this. They've already told us this. You know, we know it. It's for a fact. So the 100 has been designed partly because it fits very, very well into a broadcasting slot. And bear in mind that that's helped us to get this competition back onto the BBC that so many of you felt was incredibly important for cricket products, as well as getting a huge uplift in the value of the broadcasting rights agreement. So I do understand why there is reticence from those that we brand ourselves cricket lovers because we're purists and we think we know all about it and all this kind of thing. That's fine, but we're not trying to attract us again with this product. We're trying to attract new people in the way that the Big Bash has in America, in Australia, with mothers and children dominating in the crowds, rather than us. What's the average age of those who have just voted that they weren't looking forward to it? They're not going to be new customers. And I'm sorry to tell you this, but you know we are getting older, and that has an inevitable conclusion. I mean, not really being replaced at the other end, sadly. So, you know, I think that the ECB have done all their homework right. If they haven't communicated it very well, I think it's because it's a massive organizational burden, or, you know, planning for this new competition. But there has been plenty going on in the background, quite a lot, actually. And all will be revealed very soon. I don't know whether it's going to be hugely attractive to the audience who just gave their impressions, but I've got to tell you that the first time that I told a group like this that we were going to start a 2020 competition, the reaction was pretty lukewarm to that as well. So just let's remind ourselves how important the 2020 has been to English cricket.
Yeah. Adi, as a South African, you know, coming over here and hearing about the 100, what are your thoughts about the competition?
I think it's exciting. You know, it's fantastic for the players. It's another avenue to earn their living. And, you know, I remember the game is evolving and it's going to evolve once we're gone as well. And I remember my school coach going crazy when I tried to play a reverse sweep. And yet my dad said, fantastic, try something new. Yeah. And, the school coach was a school coach for a reason. And he didn't have a vision. And, you know, the game has moved on, and now Vincey, if you can't play reverse sweep, you're not gonna make, you know, the runs at the required rate. So we all have to adapt and evolve, yep, and look at new ways of keeping money in the game. And I think it's another avenue. Mm. It's a different avenue. We're not getting rid of anything we've got. It's a different avenue to earn. And it's an investment, which means you're going to get money at the end of the day. Yeah. And so it's, I think, to run the game that we love so well, we need these other avenues.
Mm. As Rod said, the broadcast deal proves that. James, I know you, as players, you've had several meetings, I guess, about this new competition. I think part of one meeting this afternoon was about it as well. How do the players feel about this?
Well, there was a little bit of, like you say, we didn't quite understand how it was going to run the fine details of it. We found out a little bit more today, but you know, the PCA, who we had the meeting with, who represent the players, are trying to, you know, push for, you know, real clarity on it as soon as possible. I think it might be running slightly behind, but we got a little bit more of understanding today. But I think, you know, as players, the most important thing is we buy into it. There's no point, you know, if we're starting a competition and the players aren't on board, you know, the whole product's going to, you know, take longer to get going. So it's important we, you know, endorse what they say and, you know, the format and everything like that, and try and make it, you know, as good to watch as possible, and, like you say, attract a new audience to the game.
I mean, I know Rod and I have talked a lot about it, but I mean, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, that as and when these player drafts come out for these new teams in the 100, are you prepared, Vincey, for maybe a situation where you might end up playing for Hampshire on one day and go and play up north for whatever franchise that is, the Yorkshire Puddings or something, I don't know, whatever. But, you know, something like that, you know, because that actually could happen, wouldn't it, if you get sold to the highest bidder?
Well, I think the draft's working slightly differently. I don't know what I can and can't say, but from what we saw today, yeah, it's sort of everyone's in at the same, you just put your name forward, you don't have to name a price, and then, you know, depending on where you get picked is, you know, reflects what you get paid. But yeah,
so you get grouped?
Well, no, so if you're first pick, you'll get X amount, if you're second pick. Okay. But yeah, obviously, you know, well, for me, I'd like to play here, but in reality, I think, you know, only a handful of us at best are going to get to play here. So you just got to, you know, embrace the new challenge and ideally play here. But wherever you end up playing, you got to buy it. It's new franchises. So there's also, you know, got to start from fresh, create a culture and all those sorts of things. So, you know, from that point of view, it'll be exciting to be a part of.
Mm, that's for sure. And of course, part of all this, sorry, Roddy, do you want to say?
Well, I was just going to say that going off to play for a different team is nothing new. Every time Vincey or Dawes or Mason or somebody goes off to play for England, they go off to play for another team and then they come back and they play for us again. That's nothing new at all. There's nothing confusing or difficult about it. It's playing for a different team. Nowadays, throughout the winter, a lot of our players are playing for a number of different franchises around the world. That's the opportunity that these competitions have thrown up.
Has anybody got any comments to make on all this? No? Okay. Yes, one there. Where's Kane? Kane, are you? Kane, why are you miles away? God, you should be staying close. Hang on, we'll get him on mic, just so that everybody who's listening can hear as well. Yes, sir.
It's just that it seems such a squeeze to put another competition in to the existing framework. And I've come to really enjoy T20. I bring my grandchildren to it. They love it. And it's evolved as a game. I wasn't talking on T20 to start with, like Rod says. It wasn't really my cup of tea, but I've come to really enjoy it. There does seem a reasonable balance now between the county game, although it's a very early start, and a late finish to the season. There is a good balance with the Red Bull game, the RLC early in the season, the home matches, and a good patch of T20 on top of that. But I do just worry that the additional 100 is just going to push the four-day game to the margins more than a lot of us would like to see. Yeah.
Well, amazingly, we thought of that. you know, the truth is that it would have been better if we could have dropped some of the county cricket to fit in the new competition. But I don't think you would have been very happy about that either. So the solution was that we'll maintain the intense level of cricket that we currently provide for traditional cricket watchers, and we'll bring in the new competition as well. The first requirement was to set up a competition with less teams in it. we can't play an IPL or a Big Bash type competition with 18 teams. It's just not viable. And our first priority was to create a new money spinning competition, which would be based in or around the big cities to bring vast numbers of people into and to create much better bigger broadcasting income than we've got in the past. So with that imperative, we then had to question, what else can we do to make that work? And one of the options was to cut down the existing program, absolutely. And you know, there's a great deal in me that says already we should be doing that and cutting down the international program, because we do try and fit quite a lot into the summer, as we'll find again this summer. So, you know, I think that what's happened is that the county chairmen as a group have voted to try and protect the volume of cricket that we've currently got at a county level, which has meant we will be playing the new 100 during the period of the 50 overs competition next season.
I want to move on from the 100, but just Charlotte, obviously the Women's Super League, 3 years I think, it's been going. It's been tremendously successful. And now, because of this new competition, the women's competition has to change with it, doesn't it?
It does. You know, I've spent a lot of time in Australia with the Women's Big Bash, and like James said, you know, they're so integrated over there. It's done so much for the women's game in Australia, the Women's Big Bash. I mean, this year, you know, games were sold out, finals, you know, TV and everything, and it was, you know, it's just grown and grown. So I can see, you know, the real benefit in aligning the teams, and that's something we had to do over here with the 100.
Is that going to go down well, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the players are very excited about it. They're going to get paid more money, which is really good. They don't get paid much now, but it's going to be great. I just think there's so many benefits for the women's game, and you know, and the fact that we'll be on terrestrial TV is even, you know, is so important.
Yeah, I know the players would like that. There is, I think I'm right in saying that I think one of the club competitions in Warwickshire has either already changed to 100 competition on the Sunday, or it's about to for its first season this year. So Warwickshire are, the as far as I know, the only county who have a club competition geared towards the 100. Do you see something like that maybe happening here? Because unless anybody else other than county players are playing it, how do you prepare for a competition like the 100? Obviously everybody's playing T20, even as youngsters and what have you. Who's going to be playing the 100?
Well, I don't think it's that much difference to T20. I mean, James is currently playing. I don't know what the guys think about playing at the moment, but I can't think it's going to be that much difference to T20. You're just going to have to do things slightly earlier. But it'd be interesting to see how it does evolve in terms of who plays it and whether club cricket. But I think club cricket needs to be kept at 50 over and potentially 20-20, and leave 100 on its own. But I think it's going to be exciting to see how players do adapt to the game.
Okay, let's leave the 100 aside for the moment. I'm sure this time next year we might be talking even more about it, and of course we'll know a lot more that's going on. Let's just come back to Hampshire a little bit more, because you know we're not far away from the start of the season. As well as talking about James Vince's England chances and Hampshire's chances as well, let's talk about one or two of the new signings, because I think we're all quite excited that at least two of the new signings in Keith Barker and James Fuller are players who are already established and will come here and hit the ground running. Adrian, just how fit are they? Are they in a shape that you're quite excited by?
Yeah, both have arrived raring to go. Equally excited as I am to play, to be involved with Hampshire. And, you know, one is in Keith Barker, very experienced, four-day player. He's played 100 matches in first-class cricket and has very good stats, bowling and batting. And James Fuller has been more of a white ball specialist. So we've got a bit of a mix there, both of them bat and bowl. And, you know, it's very exciting to have two established players like that playing, you know, on the staff.
I mean, how do you see them fitting in terms of number of games? I mean, is there enough options from what you've seen in the squad to, I mean, not rotation, but allow you to sort of pick the right players for the right conditions rather than maybe players picking themselves because there's nobody else?
Well, it is quite a big squad, and fortunately we have a lot of cricket to play. So, you know, over the three different formats, there are specialists in all three that we have in our squad, but I think we're well covered to, you know, to perform well in all three of the formats. And some, you know, there will be some players that play all three, but there'll be others that will only play one of the three formats. Mm. So I think, you know, we're fortunate that we are playing so much cricket, otherwise some of them won't get game time.
Yeah. And as captain, James, I guess options for you is absolutely ideal, isn't it?
Yeah, I think having a, you know, just not just a good starting 11, but having a squad that you're comfortable in if you do get injuries or, like you say, someone needs a rest. You know, generally the teams that have been consistent in the championship have had, you know, a big squad and guys that they're comfortable, you know, coming in at any time, you know, due to injury and stuff like that. So I feel like we've got a good crop of players to pick from across all formats. And like Eddie said, I'm sure at some point in the year everyone will get their opportunity. You know, and got a lot of confidence in the group we got here that they'll be able to perform out on the pitch.
Mm. I joked with Keith Barker today, actually, because those of you that follow county cricket a lot will know that Keith Barker bowling and Jeetan Patel, the off-spinner, bowling into his rough, he's kind of had it good over a number of years. I'm just wondering one or two of the Hampshire spinners, although it might be slightly different with Liam Dawson and also with Mason Crane, maybe bowling a slightly different line, but they must be licking their lips a little bit with having Keith Barker bowling at one end and maybe having a little bit of rough to sort of work with for a change.
Oh yeah, he does make a big hole there, and like you say, I didn't enjoy it when he was playing against us, and then like you say, Jeetan would come on and land it in there more often than not. It was hard work, but yeah, I'm sure the spinners, you know, I think we got a lot of cricket through the middle of the 4-day cricket through the middle of the summer here, so you know, balance of the team, we got two good spin options there. Dawes obviously being able to bat in the middle order as well opens up options to hopefully get Mason in as and when conditions fit. But yeah, no, but I've really enjoyed having Barks around, not just looking forward to the experience on the pitch, but I found him, you know, his chat around the dressing room and helping the other guys I've been really impressed with so far.
Mm. And James Fuller, I mean, I don't know either of them very well. He seems a different kind of character a little bit. Oh, right. A bit more quiet, I don't know.
Well, I don't know how quiet he is, but he's, you know, he's a very talented player, and he's got a bit of pace. Mm. So he bowls a heavy ball, and he can hit it a long way. So he's a good all-round prospect, and you know, he has had game time, and he's proven over time that he's, you know, he's formidable on his day, and yeah, he's an exciting guy to have in the squad.
Yeah, most people remember the 6 wickets he got here in the T20. I think he came on about 5th change in that T20 game here last. 6th change, was it? 6th change, thank you. 6th change, and he got 6 for not very many, didn't he, for Middlesex against Hampshire, which was quite incredible. Anyway, so you can certainly bowl. Rod, obviously, the one downside is Karuna Ratne, the Sri Lankan who you announced last month, I think it was, roughly, was going to be Hampshire's overseas player, but things have changed a bit now, haven't they?
Yeah, well, obviously, Karuna Ratne's career has been really taken off over the last year, which we've all seen. That's why we signed him. But, of course, the result of that is that it looks as though Sri Lanka are going to make him team captain, probably for the World Cup, which made him a doubt for us, at least during the first part of the spell. So we've shifted attention elsewhere, and AD and Vincey have been quite busy in that area, and hopefully we'll bring something to fruition very, very soon.
Mm. That's good news. Right, OK. So that's that one sorted. Let's talk a little bit about the World Cup, because that's coming to the Aegeus Bowl as well. 5 matches, I think I'm right in saying, plus a warm-up game, England-Australia. I'm actually looking forward to the warm-up game, I think, more than the main games, but that's just a personal view. And you're looking at me, Rod, as if I'm mad, but anyway.
Well, it's probably because it's the only one you'll get into.
Well, the other games, Hampshire, are playing away, so I won't be able to see them either. Let's talk a little bit about the World Cup. Charlotte, obviously, it's a men's competition, but of course, you know, globally, it's a huge competition. I'm just wondering, from a women's point of view, can they relate to that, and will that help sell the game to women who, you know, you are trying to grow the sport to anyway?
Yeah, I think it's a huge opportunity for us to sell the game this summer, and I think what we've got is a fantastic team as well in England at the moment, who, you know, obviously high expectations of them to win the tournament. But yeah, I think it's just a huge opportunity globally to keep growing cricket. And like Rod talks about, to get that new audience, you know, and I think men, women, children, I think it's a wonderful opportunity. Mm.
It's a big logistical exercise, isn't it, putting on World Cup matches here, isn't it? Rod.
Oh.
So you were just laughing as I was saying that, so obviously. Yes.
Right, yes, it's hard work, but we're good at it, and we'll put on a very good show for them.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Right, I was hoping you were going to say, we've done this, and we've done that, and we've done this, and the ground will look totally different.
It'll look as it does on international days. It'll look spectacular, full up with a lot of people. The Pakistan One Day International preceding the World Cup will be a really spectacular event as well. And if you're planning to go to that, you need to get some tickets pretty soon because they're nearly sold out. It's going to have a great crowd at that game, fantastic atmosphere. I think all internationals at this ground have a great atmosphere, and I do think our ops team deliver very well. Yep. So I'm not particularly worried about delivering the World Cup.
Good. AD, it hasn't escaped your notice, I'm sure, that a couple of the games feature South Africa.
Yes.
India here and the West Indies as well. Thoughts on those?
Well, it'll be fantastic to see my mates.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, they're all big games, and, you know, South Africa haven't done particularly well in World Cups in our history. And I think they're going to be flying under the radar this year, which I think suits them, and keep as much, you know, keep the pressure off maybe a little bit. But, you know, if you look at rankings, South Africa have been up there in the top three in most formats for, you know, for the last, I don't know how many years, but we've never landed a World Cup. And so, you know, there's great pressure to do that for the first time, and whoever does that will go down in history and never be forgotten. So it's a bit like winning a four-day championship. Yeah.
that certainly wouldn't be forgotten because it's been quite a while, as we all know. So who's your tip then for the World Cup?
England.
Yeah, because?
Because I think they're the best all-round side in the world. I think they've played a brand of cricket over the last couple of years that's sort of preparing them for this World Cup. Yeah. They bat very deep. And, you know, I think their death bowling, you know, the last 10 overs in that format is very tricky if you've got wickets in hand. If the team against you have wickets in hand, and, you know, death bowling in those last 10 is incredibly important. Mm. You know, just a year ago, the sort of average scores in the last 10 was about 90. And, you know, with I think England have got some of the best death bowlers around, but their depth and their all-round squad, I think, is the best in the world.
Who's your tip, Lindsay?
England as well.
Yeah.
Pretty much what Eddie said there. It's been, you know, it's when you're watching, you sort of know how they're going to play, and I think that's, you know, the players know their roles really well. They know exactly what they're going to do. There's no, they've got complete freedom to go out and play like that, and you know, for, you know, quite a high risk approach to one day cricket, they've been, you know, really consistent at it. So, you know, if they play as they have done previously, and, you know, the pressure of a World Cup doesn't get to them, then like Eddie said, I can't see anyone beating them.
Yeah. Rod, do you agree? England?
Yeah, I agree with England. I think it's no secret that I'm a big admirer of the team captain, Owen Morgan. I think he's been grooming a squad of a settled squad for a long period of time where everybody knows their job. And yeah, I think they've got a good chance, even though they, like South Africa, have never won it before.
You're going for England as well, aren't you, Charlotte?
I am, but I'm worried about Australia.
Are you? Because?
Well, they seem to have turned things around in the last sort of a couple of months. Finch, they've done really well in India. They're doing really well in Pakistan, and they've got two massive players to come back into their team. So,
yeah.
And they've gone under the radar. So. Australia, potentially, I hate to say it.
Yeah. I can hear mutterings out there saying, oh, Steve Smith and David Warner are back. Are you all going to welcome them back?
No.
Really? Right, that'd be nice. Because obviously,
sign them?
Yeah. Oh. Who would be against Hampshire signing them if they were available? They're not many, so you actually would, but they would be happy. Because, of course, the warm-up game, there's a good chance that they'll both be here. So give them a warm welcome.
We need an opener.
Huh?
We need an opener.
Need an opener. There you go. Steve Smith or David Warner? Show of hands. Who would prefer Steve Smith out of the two? A half. And the other half, David Warner, yes? Nobody, not many for David Warner, okay. I'm sure that will sway the management if they go down that route. Make a note of that, Rod. Listen, we're running out a bit of time. I want to talk about an incident that happened earlier on this week. Is it Mancadding? You'll all know, you probably most of you have seen the video where Ravi Ashwin pretends to bowl in the IPL game and doesn't let the ball go. Joss Butler is about a millimetre out of his crease, probably a bit more, but not much more, and he is run out. It seems to have divided the cricket world, those that know the cricket and don't know the cricket and what have you. Anyway, so there seems to be contrasting views, so I'm going to ask the panel what they thought about that incident, and is it okay to do what Ashwin did? Aidy?
No.
Thank you. There you go. Because? Because? No, I want a bit more. Because?
No, I just don't think it should be part of cricket. You know, there's too many vague, you know, vague rules around it. And I don't think he intended to bowl the ball. And the guy that he ran out is my favourite cricketer. sorry, Vincey.
No. You're losing the squad here, Aidy. Right, okay. James, what were your thoughts?
No, I thought it was pathetic, really. Yeah, if Joss had been running halfway down the pitch and really trying to gain an advantage, then still no, but there would have been a bit more logic to it. But he, you know, he was watching the bat. He was still in his crease when Ashwin would have delivered the ball. And he didn't have to move to put his bat back in apart from reach a little bit. So there was no intention for Joss to try and get on strike or anything like that. Yeah, it was petty.
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it, Rod? That actually it's not like Butler was, as James says, trying. He was actually just, well, not even walking out of his crease. I mean, he was hardly doing anything, was he?
No, it was contrived, and if Ashwin was in our team, I would be deeply ashamed, and it might be the last time he'd ever play for us.
Right, so there you are. So Ashwin won't be coming as an overseas player. So that's one we can strike off. Interesting. I don't know if you saw it, but there was a tweet from Michael Vaughan after that incident where he said, because obviously there's in India there's been a bit of support for Ashwin, as you can imagine, probably because it was Butler that was doing the backing up, but Michael Vaughan's tweet, I don't know if you saw it, where he said, I wonder if he'd have got the same support if he'd done it to Kohli.
So or Warner.
Well, you know, got great support, maybe. Charlotte, what was your view on it all?
It's just terrible, yeah. It's something we don't want to see in the game, and agree with everyone else. Yeah, it's not a place for it, and with Rod, shouldn't be. You'd just sack him, wouldn't you, Rod?
Not my job.
But the interesting thing is, it's not the first time it's happened to Joss Butler. It happened a year or two ago, didn't it? So is there something there? I don't know.
Well, there was a process followed in the Sri Lanka game where they believed that Butler was stealing an advantage and they warned him. You know, there is a process. This was, as far as I know, unwarned. But it was also a stop in the action and a momentary wait for what happened. And I have no time for it.
Mm. Should the law be changed?
Yeah.
Yeah? Everybody thinks the law should be. Does somebody want to just tell us? Kane, you're miles away again. God. Does somebody want to just tell us what they think? There's just somebody who thinks the law should be changed and why. Come down the front. Kane, down the front, which is the furthest away that you are. God. You're nearer the studios than you are these people. All right, okay. That gentleman at the front. There you go.
Like that, sir.
Right.
Yes, I think the MCC will need to make a change. I'm quite sure they will. I think they've already made a statement about that. It's a tricky one because if you don't change anything, then the backer up will continually try and get an edge. And in this case, Butler wasn't trying to get an edge and he shouldn't have been run out. In other cases, I think you could argue it was different. And just having a gentleman's agreement that you'll always warn someone is probably not the right way of dealing with it.
Mm. The thing is, you're never then going to stop people that actually are deliberately trying to stop pinch a couple of yards, are you? So it's a difficult one, isn't it?
Well, no, I don't think it is difficult. I think if you deliberately stop in the middle of your delivery stride, the ball's dead.
Yeah.
If you stop your action, the ball's dead.
Quickly, hang on, just quickly, Kane, just give it, he's got about 10 seconds to say something, so you'll have to paraphrase that article if it's over two pages. Kane.
I'll read the last paragraph. In 2017, the MCC changed the wording also to stress this is a problem caused by the non-striker. The MCC changed the title of the law from bowler attempting to run out non-striker to non-striker leaving his or her ground early. In other words, it's a bit of a one or the other, isn't it? Mm.
Right, thank you very much. Thank you, sir. Right, thanks to Kane, who got the mic round a couple of times there in the end. Thanks to our panel, A.D. Birrell, James Vince, Rob Bransgrove, and Charlotte Edwards. Thank you very much. Good luck, of course, to the Hampshire side and, of course, to the Hampshire women and the Southern Vipers this year. Don't forget, all the games are live on BBC Radio Solent. They will be online only this year. Please don't send any addresses, not to me. I know, I wasn't going to say it tonight, but it is online only next year. Have a very good evening.